It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Yay, some big events this week. We need to talk about them. One of them is Father's Day. I think about my dad a lot. I also will tell you it's the longest day of the year. And that's something you should think about a lot, because that is the signal for you to start doing things in your yard. It is kind of halfway point in the year. And it means that you've got a lot of activities. We're talking about that. What do you need to be doing? Because the longest day in the year means you need to be preparing for the shortest day in the year. That's right. And I do that. I think, God, you know, it really is our time to prepare to make use of the garden, even to the shortest days of the year, which are going to occur somewhere around December 21st, 23rd, somewhere in there. But today's that longest day. It also was a day, a week, with lots of rain. And we have to talk about rain a lot. And maybe it doesn't get our attention, really. And maybe I can talk about it a lot and it not get your attention until it actually does rain. And how much rain did you get? If you lived in Pensacola, it wasn't so bad, I don't think. If you were in Evergreen, it was pretty bad. If you were in Mobile, boy, howdy, you got 5-something inches of rain. I guess maybe 5.5, getting maybe close to 6 inches of rain over a few days last week. Most of it in one day. In fact, I think you set a record on the 18th in Mobile, probably at both airports, both ends of Mobile. We don't have as good a record for Fairhope for all the reasons we don't, but I suspect Fairhope was pretty close, and other places in Baldwin County were pretty close in terms of rainfall. A lot of rain. It wasn't the worst rainfall in the state. There were places that got more. There are two big areas of rainfall, well, two or three big areas of rainfall concentration in Alabama. It's one of the forests we work in, which is in this incredible limestone area in northeast Alabama. One of those forests got about 12 inches of rain in maybe 30 hours. And that was really fascinating to watch. And that has happened. I remember something pretty close to that happening. Pretty close to that happening in Mobile once. Here, there's really, where the forest, where it occurred in northeast Alabama, there really wasn't any place for the water to go. Except to build up in these valleys. Because it wasn't leaving very quickly. And usually it leaves through these drain holes in the karst, in the limestone. And a place where we research and look at wildflowers, it was covered in 12 feet of water. Pretty impressive. You could see the mud lines after the rain, high above your head. I don't know that there's a boat big enough to see what that looks like in the middle of it. It was quite dramatic. And so we're all seeing the effects of rainfall. And it's going to show up in some really interesting ways, and you're going to worry about it. You're not going to think about it. But if you've got plants in pots, If you've got plants in containers and you get 9 inches of rain at Georgetown, as Jim does, or nearly 5 inches in 2 days like B-Dark does, you're going to start seeing the effects on plants. And let's talk about some of them. It is the great case. You've heard me say this over and over and over again. If you're growing plants in containers, you need to use the most free draining soil mix you can possibly find. You want to use, if you could use pure, in conditions like this, if you could use pine bark that hasn't even decomposed very much, with lots of big pieces, big pieces, meaning pieces the size of your thumbnail, you need to do that, because otherwise those plants are going to start turning yellow, and you may notice that. It looks like they need feeding. They don't need feeding. That's not the issue. They just need to dry out. They need to dry out. They probably need better drainage. Maybe even in the container itself, and it's sometimes hard to achieve that, and particularly if you're trying to drain out of just the bottom, sometimes it's good to even put drain holes in the side of the pots, but that won't solve the issue if the mixture you have isn't free draining. Just really important. So if you're seeing that on your plants today, understand that's why it is. And if you're scheduled to get a little more rain, and some of you may already be getting more rain, bring those potted plants out of the rain. Make sure they get plenty of sun. But don't let them sit in the rain anymore. If plants are wilting, they're not wilting because of lack of rain. They're not wilting because of lack of moisture. They're wilting because they've had too much. There's no oxygen on the roots. There are all sorts of diseases that are going to attack them. So plants in pots are going to be a problem. It's going to be a big problem for tomatoes. They just really aren't going to like this. And you're going to start seeing blossom end rot quite likely on some plants, in part because uptake of nutrients is going to be interrupted because the roots are basically starved for oxygen and starved for the ability to move nutrients through the ground, up through the plant, and to even circulate water. And the plants may wilt in part because they can't move water anymore. It's just bizarre, isn't it? That's what happens when you get too much rain. And so I always emphasize, you don't need to worry about drought if you're in Alabama. You need to worry about rain. And if you fix the rain, if you fix the situation so that plants can operate well during these heavy, heavy deluges, and if you fix the soil so that the soil doesn't rot the plant during these heavy deluges, you're also going to create conditions that help that plant survive drought, because these floods make the plants much more vulnerable to drought. And so when we get these dry spells, which we're going to get before the end of summer, probably around August, maybe as early as July, but usually around August, September, you're going to start getting, your plants are going to start wilting because their root systems are so destroyed by this heavy rain if you don't have the right soils. So we got to talk about that. I don't know whether you want to talk about it, but shoot, it's my duty to make you think about these things so that you'll have a good garden. So that you'll have a good garden. Got getting reports on rain coming in. Will said 8.75 inches that he recorded in Fairhope. We'll catch up on that rainfall. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about your soils. We'll talk about the problems you're going to see and how to deal with them the best you can. And we're going to talk about the shortest day of the year, longest day of the year, and the shortest day of the year.
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
All right, welcome back. Bunch of interesting questions appearing. Pawpaws appear to have loved the rain, says Jim. His rainforest in Buena Mulata. Peppers got pretty brutalized by the wind and downpours, but they're looking good. I think Jim's drainage in his pots must be pretty good if he got 9 inches of rain in Georgetown and they're looking that good. So that's good to know. Tomatoes, B. Dark's tomatoes are looking pretty good. She sent me pictures. Will didn't 8.75 inches, right, since Monday in Fairhope was what Will said. So a lot of rain. What do you do for it in your yards? And I think one of the reactions is to, this is interesting. One of the reactions is just to isolate your plants, from the ground altogether. And that, you can do that in containers. If you use, as Jim says he does, pine bark. You got to keep a really well-drained system going. There, if you use any other, if you were to use a soil mix, that is typically sold at places like Home Depot and Lowe's and it doesn't have a lot of pine bark in it, you're going to run into big problems, even putting them in containers and even building a raised bed above ground. So a lot of people will assume that if you just simply raise the bed above the ground, some people put a plastic liner underneath it. Boy, does that make a mess. That you're going to be able to solve the problem. But I will tell you that in some ways, typical soil mixes raised 2 feet above the ground will drain much more poorly than the dirt itself in your yard. When you're trying to improve the drainage, you don't need a lot of, elevation. You only need about 6 inches. And I emphasize this over and over again. If you've got the leaves, just build up 6 inches of topsoil when you plant your tomatoes. It's all they need. And you can do that by building up a layer of a couple of bags every 3 feet, one to two bags of leaves every 3, 4, 5 feet. In a row and just letting it molder down and plant your tomatoes directly in it. It makes a ton of difference. And then add mulch as the season goes on. That's fine too because that mulch will continue to break down a little bit. But your tomatoes will be fine. And it only needs about 6 inches of increased elevation because below that, oxygen's going to decline anyway. And most of your roots are actually going to be in that first 6 inches of soil. But it will give, and it will allow internal drainage. It will improve internal drainage. Here's the other thing. Before you put those leaves down, I do recommend this. Crack the soil with a shovel, with a fork, just crack it. Don't turn it. Don't do anything funny or fancy to it. Just crack it. And then put your leaves on top. The leaves will kill the weeds if you put them on that thick, which is very useful. You'll have to plan ahead. And that's one of the things that good gardening does, is requires planning ahead. So let's talk a little bit about rainfall. Let's talk about how to improve the drainage in your yard. I'm certainly thinking about how to deal with, how do you deal with 12 inches of rainfall when you have roads? I'm having to think about it. Took an engineer out to deal with some of the gravel roads that we have, that we have to maintain for researchers to access the forest, for hunters to access the forest. How do you deal with that? Oh, if any of you are having that problem, you give me a call. We'll talk about it. We'll try to figure that one out. But the other thing we have to think about with all this rain is that we're in the longest day of the year. And it will, and that inevitably makes us, you should also think about the coming of the shortest day of the year, which is July, August, September, October, November, December. I'm counting on my hand. That's 6 months away, right? It is. And these next 6 months are what you need to be planning for, because we're just halfway through the garden year. We didn't complete the gardening year by planting in spring. We just got halfway there. What's next? This is when, if you've got tomatoes, they're going to struggle. Even B. Dark's tomatoes may struggle. As we get more into the July days and nights. And those July nights are going to stay super warm. And that is very hard for tomatoes. You're already seeing it. I mean, the forecast, June 20th, this is the transition. I mean, we're in Gulf summer now. And those nights forecast, where we don't get below 79 degrees, look at your forecast along the Gulf Coast, and you're not getting temperatures below 79 degrees all day long. This does a number on a lot of plants, unless they're from tropical conditions where that happens a lot. And tomatoes are not, at least not the tomatoes that we grow. And many of your common peppers like bell peppers are not, at least, they're not. And things like squash, they're not going to be able to tolerate this, except for maybe some of the tropical squash that are North American, Central American squash, like the squash we talk about so much, the Korean squash. Actually, that has some tolerance for high night temperatures. So you're only a few of your tropical plants are going to do it. So what are you going to do? First off, let's talk about your tomatoes. This is the time of year when it's a good, if you want to take cuttings from your tomato before early blight creeps up the stem, which it's going to do with all this rain. There ain't nothing you can do about that. It's just going to happen. Your tomatoes are going to have to outgrow it. But if you can take cuttings from the tips of your plants, the tips of your tomato plants, stay the top 6 inches, and root, to pull the leaves off so you can easily insert them in soil, and try to root those, you'll have a new fresh tomato that will be productive when the weather turns tomato-y again, which is going to be September. That young tomato will grow just fine through July and August. It will. Probably may even escape early blight, but it will just go ahead and get it in the pot, get it going, get it started, and then plant it out when it gets some firm leaves on it, and it's probably mid-July. And boom, you'll have a tomato that'll be ready to produce for you in September, October. If you don't want to take cuttings, if you want to try tomatoes, this may be the best season to start tomatoes. Right now. A lot of you think, a lot of you don't like the idea of starting tomatoes in February, or preferably January. And it's hard to think about tomatoes then. But now is the time, if you're in on the Gulf Coast, to think about tomatoes. It's probably not too late to even think about starting tomatoes in North Alabama, in much of North Alabama. So go ahead, get those tomatoes started. We can talk about some other things. Great time to start peppers. Great time to start okra. Great time to start king squash, as we call it. Great time to start watermelons. We can talk about that. Butter beans.
Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 1065.
Yeah, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning, Northwest Florida Sunday morning, Mississippi Sunday morning. Some questions to ask. Questions being asked and questions to answer. Wayne wants to know whether he can overspray his Mondo grass to get rid of the Kogon grass that's coming up in it. Wayne, I'll tell you that it's tricky. If it is indeed Mondo grass and not Liriope, if it's a really short growing grass that stays short and doesn't get very tall, it's more likely to be Mondo grass. If it is more of a tall monkey grass like plant, Liriope spicata, that grass is not as susceptible. It's not as susceptible to glyphosate as some other plants. But you have to be very, very careful about the rates. If you're talking about Mondo grass, it's going to probably be much more susceptible to glyphosate. So that's a trick. Here's the other problem. At the rates, in order to successfully control Kogon grass with glyphosate, you may not be able to control the Kogon grass without damaging the Liriope. It's going to be a trick. I would use here's what you can hope for. And I don't think just one spraying will work. That's the problem with Kogon grass. Kogon grass is a huge issue. I wish I could fix it for everybody. If I could fix it for everybody, I'd feel really good. But I can't. And it's a big problem for a lot of people. And when it comes up in your beds, it's just a nightmare. And it would be a real nightmare where you're looking at beds with Mondo grass, true Mondo grass, short-growing Mondo grass. I could see it being a little easier to fix in lily turf, in Liriope. But yes, it's possible, but you would have to use it at a very low rate and very carefully. And calibrating that is going to be tricky. It's going to be difficult. So I suppose I should be glib and say, okay, here's what you do with the Kogon grass. And it's hard. I will say this. If it's a low-growing Mondo grass, it means that you can possibly manage the Mondo grass with mowing with frequent mowing that will disrupt the Kogon grass, because Kogon grass likes to have long blades. It loves to have plenty of sunlight. And so it's more vulnerable to mowing than many other grasses. So frequent mowing of Mondo grass or lily turf can actually reduce the Kogon grass infestations. Always remember that the Kogon grass can come quickly from an adjacent area. So if you have an area that you're where the Kogon grass can get into it, it will. So even if you were to spray it out in one place, if you were successful in that, the roots will allow it to penetrate back into that Mondo grass. So the simple answer is, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard to calibrate glyphosate so that you get the Kogon grass effectively and have little or no effect on the larapi. I would recommend trying mowing. Wayne, try mowing. And if that seems impossible in that area, well, send me a picture and let's look at it and let's think about it. All right. Let's think about that. The other thing Wayne asked was, is this the right time of year to graft citrus? Yes and no. I would say probably the ideal time to graft citrus is when the days are a little less hot. If we get a series of days in July where we're not looking at 90 degree temperatures, when we're looking at temperatures merely around 85 degrees, that's probably a good time. If we get one of those Julys where we're getting a lot of days with temperatures 90 to 95, and we really don't get temperatures, say, down to 75 at night, I think that makes those cuttings suffer a little bit more. And you might have to mist them a little more during hot days, because they can dry out. They can dry out. And just misting around the base of those cuttings may help if we get a series of really dry days without a lot of rainfall. So July can be a good time to graft citrus, and I know people who do it in July. You don't want to do it too late into fall because you want temperatures to be rather warm. But October could be a good time if temperatures are declining and we get some rainfall. September can be a good time as long as temperatures are not too high. April's a good time. Maybe for some people, I would say April, unless you're doing it in containers, April may be the best time if you're doing it and if you're doing it out in the field. I think from my mind, April, early May can be a very good time. The temperatures are in the perfect range along the Gulf Coast, 70 to 85 degrees. But July is going to work okay too. If we have regular rainfall in the forecast and those afternoon showers break the heat, I think you can have really good success with grass in July. And certainly again in fall, but I would certainly give it a shot, being aware that super high temperatures are not good for those grass and can cause problems. Anybody with any other thoughts about that who's done a lot of grafting with citrus and they can share their experience, where I always welcome that. Wayne's trying to send me pictures of this larapi, I suspect, so we'll come back and talk about that when those pictures come in. Okay, so the first picture is my butter beans. Second is my pole beans. Will I get butter beans? So, you're getting pole beans for sure. And which one is that? Is that, what pole bean is that? Is that a rattlesnake type pole bean? Here's the thing about butter beans. On the Gulf Coast, did I give you a list? Did I mention earlier we had a whole list of things that we wanted to get planted this time of year? if you're on the Gulf Coast, it's not a bad thing to plant your butter beans this time of year. So you're not going to see a lot of butter bean production during July. But be dark, if you do, you need to call me and say, I saw plenty of production for my butter beans. In my experience, let me say, you're not going to get as much butter bean production in July, no matter when you plant them. Plant them super early. It's just, they're just not going to produce as much. But starting in August, September, October, no matter when you plant them, you can get really good production. So it's okay to plant them now. Don't wait too much longer. If you're in North Alabama, it may even be a little bit late at this point, though it's maybe worth the risk. But you can plant them late because that production is going to pick up in August, September, October. What are you going to do for beans during July? If your rattlesnake beans quit and your butter beans haven't started back, well, that's an interesting issue. Sometimes, well, one thing, never forget southern peas. And they're a great addition to the garden. They will actually tolerate the heat. At least the toughest ones will. And you'll have to find the toughest ones for your yard. The whippoorwill style peas did very well for me. But there's some others that will actually tolerate that heat of July and will produce very well during that period of time. So that may be a good time to think about in that sort of in-between time between the pole beans, the long beans, and the butter beans later in summer, to think about midsummer, and you can plant them right now. Would have been nicer to plant them 1st of June, but this is a great time to do it too. Go ahead and get those planted. You'll get plenty of great southern peas. Now, there is a southern pea type that you don't think of as a southern pea type that may also do better for you during these rainy daily days of Gulf summer through July and into early August. And those are the peas that we call asparagus bean or snake bean or yard long bean. They have a lot of different names. Yard long beans. Let's go with that name for the time being, can we? Yard long beans are a little more heat tolerant even than rattlesnake beans. They're not perfect, but they're very good. And so if you get those yard long beans planted sometime in early May, and they'll be ready to harvest in July, then you may be able to bridge that Gulf summer bean dearth. How's that? Does that help? And don't worry about your butter beans. They're going to grow like crazy. They'll still grow like crazy, be dark, but they may not produce as much. Don't panic. Keep them going into August, September, October. And that's why I plant my butter beans later. Because one, they're going to grow, they're going to get so big, and they're going to grow all over the place during these Gulf summer days. And then because they're not even stopping to produce fruit. And then when they do produce fruit, you got a huge mess. So I plant mine a little bit later, those butter beans. But don't worry, I don't think you're going to see a lot during July, but you tell me if you see differently. Be dark. What else we got? Gosh, Josh in Fowl River's got an incredible picture of all the stuff he's getting from his garden, including pole beans of various kinds. Josh, let us know which kinds. It looks like tromboncino squash. Peppers. My eyesight is not quite good enough to tell which pepper that is, but Josh will give us a rundown, and we're going to come back, and we got a caller. Thank you.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, I tell you what, Be Dark has no fear of hard-to-pronounce plants. Do you? So it's, I think it's a Chinese name, and it looks like a Romano bean that she's growing, Qingbine, I don't know. I think the Qing is pretty simple. The B-A-I-N is a little more difficult, and Be Dark likes that, changing that B-A-I-N to B-R-A-I-N. Yeah, and planning on May Day is when she planted those, and they're doing really well. I'm really interested in those beans, and I'm interested in your thoughts, and please keep reporting about Qingbine, whatever the heck, beans. Be Dark, I'm going to make you come on the air one day and pronounce all these things for us. Because none of us know how to pronounce it. But they're good, and it's good sometimes to look at these, at a lot of Southeast Asian vegetables, because they grow in conditions similar to ours. And so if Romano beans in general don't do well for us, but at least I don't find they do, but it looks like yours are doing quite well. And so I'm really interested. I like Romano beans. They're good. They're different. They're good. Maybe this is the variety. I want to hear more about this bean. Did you do, I didn't mean if you thought I was in any way criticizing your planning schedule. I'm not at all. I think you did just right. Planning on May Day. I will say that King of the Garden is probably not the best butter bean for the South, but it may do okay. It's just certainly not going to, my bet is it's probably not going to produce during July and August. It won't produce until we get really cool days. Now, prove me wrong. Always hope you will. There are a lot of other butter beans that I would try. King of the Garden is typically a New England kind of northern butter bean that's grown farther north, and it's a fine, okay, somewhat okay butter bean. But Florida speckled and a lot of others are going to be more heat tolerant. They're probably going to do better for us. But I think King of the Garden may eventually produce. May is a great time to plant those beans. You can plant your Romano beans like the Qingbine earlier. Got a question about Bermuda grass, which I'm going to have to hit in the next hour. So stay tuned for that. Solomon, whom I have not heard from in quite a while.
Well, good morning. It's good to hear your voice. Am I coming in clear on the phone here?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Actually, I'm doing very, very well. I have another question on transplanting bamboo for you.
Yes, sir.
I have transplanted a good bit of bamboo, followed your directions, usually transplant it in February or March. But I need to transplant some fairly soon here. And I'm wondering whether I should be trimming the tops of this bamboo off. It's a clumping style of bamboo, and they're about 6 foot tall, 5 foot,
yes,
6 foot tall.
So here's the thing. Yeah, and so I would say this is actually an okay time to do it. If you're seeing sprouts, are you seeing sprouts? Are you seeing young'uns coming up?
Yes, yeah.
Good, perfect. So what you want is a clump that has, and a little later in the year is better. It may be better than February and March. I can't remember how we got to February and March, my last advice, but I would say you really want to look for the time to move it when you're beginning to see young sprouts emerging. And so what you want, and that's usually a little later in the year.
Okay.
To do that, to do that, what you want is at least one or two taller canes that are mature canes that grew up last year or even the year before, but they're mature canes, and at least two or three young sprouts. So you want a clump big enough to contain both the mature canes and those younger sprouts. So you'll cut around the edge, get a little bit of both, and then it doesn't hurt to cut off those taller ones. And then sometimes, if it's a super tall bamboo, you kind of have to, because otherwise they're going to lever it out of the ground. It's nice if those taller canes have a few leaves left on them after you cut them off. So if they've got some canes lower down, that's nice. But effectively, if they're much over 5 feet, you're probably going to have to trim the tops off anyway.
Right.
And minimize how much you trim. But you might have to trim them just to keep it. But it's those young sprouts you're trying to do. The reason you include the mature sprouts in there is because that's where the root carbohydrates are that are basically feeding those younger sprouts. So you know you're getting those older roots that actually can feed the younger sprouts. The cane, and I'm giving too much information at this point, but maybe I'm rationalizing my directions here. The cane itself will do some photosynthesis. Not a lot, but there's enough green on that cane stalk that it will do photosynthesis and maintain itself. And I've seen, I can tell you that when I'm trying to do bamboo restoration, deer drive me crazy. They love the tops of canes, tons of protein, and particularly in our native canes, and they'll come through and they'll just nip the tops off. Drives me absolutely berserk. And it slows it down a little bit, but those canes survive and their roots survive and they're pushing their nutrients into those little sprouts around it. So that's the way to do it. And I think this is a good time. I think this is a fine time. It definitely helps to have frequent rainfall, which I think we're going to have for a while.
Yeah. The last two weeks have certainly proved that.
Right. Well, and that's, that was a little bit exceptional. We don't know how many tropical storms we're going to have, but July is, if it's a good July, if it's a typical July, if it's a July like I love on the Gulf Coast that we all grew up with, you know that at 4 o'clock, 3 or 4 o'clock every day, boom, the thunderhead clouds are going to develop and we're going to get rainfall somewhere around Mobile Bay. And chances are very good it's going to happen in your yard. So, yeah.
What about using the rooting powder, the hormone powder, rooting hormone?
It won't help at all. Will not help at all in this situation. That's a very different kind of thing. I don't think it'll help at all. I feel fairly certain it won't. I don't even think you should waste your time with that. I think you should do your best to get as large a clump as you can that you can manage and get it moved and planted.
Okay. Very good. I enjoy the show. Thank you.
Solomon, it's bye-bye. Good. I wish we had more time to talk. You should call more often.
Real good. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Oh boy, a lot of interesting experiments going on out there. I want to hear back from everybody that I have assigned tasks And you have an assigned task. If I told you, report to me about how this does. Report to all of us. That's the use of this. I can't try everything in the world. I don't want to try everything in the world. That's the truth. But it is really fun to have you folks try some things and instruct me about what works really well. And B Dark is doing that with her assignment, is to tell us how her assignment is two things. One, to figure out how to pronounce it. And two, tell us how her Quing Vain beans do. That's Quing Bain. I don't know what it means. I know it's a Romano bean. I haven't ever grown it. I think if it is from a humid part of China that is warm, I think it's probably going to do, it's potentially going to do really well. And it looks like it's doing okay for B-Dark. So I'm kind of excited about it. I want to hear more about it. I like Romano beans. I've had a really hard time getting Romano beans to work along the Gulf Coast. I think rattlesnake beans and a lot of others work a lot better. Do I like Romano beans better than I like rattlesnake beans and some of the others? I don't know. They're different, aren't they? They're different. I don't know. But, you know, if B-Dark grows these and they're doing really well, I'm going to grow them side by side and I'm going to decide which one I like better. But B-Dark, the ball is in your court here. You need to tell us how they do. You also need to tell me, if I'm wrong about King of the Garden and you actually get some production out of it, I want to know that. My standard answer with King of the Garden is it's not a great one for the South. If you're in Asheville, North Carolina, they did okay when I lived there when I was younger and I grew them. When I was going to school up there, and then people grew them in New England, but in Virginia and places like that. But they're not, they just didn't seem to do as well for me in Alabama, and I've heard a lot of other people say that as well. And I can't remember all the issues. It may have to do with night temperatures. I suspect that's a lot of it. It may have to do with, there may even be a day length issue. I'm not sure. But in general, King of the Garden just did not do as well. But here's the thing. I could be just wrong. And increasingly as I get older, I love being wrong. What can I say? Because it opens up new possibilities when you're wrong. But that's my experience so far. B-Dark, help us out. The great pictures from Josh. Josh's assignment was to tell me everything that he had in that he had picked, and he's got some great things there. Picked a lot yesterday, Josh in Fowl River. Rattlesnake beans, tromboncino squash, I could see that. Cowhorn and jalapeno peppers, and banana peppers, and lunchbox peppers, and okra. I mean, this is the season when it starts to happen, right? And that tromboncino will keep producing. The rattlesnakes, Josh, keep me posted on how long your rattlesnakes produce. It's an interesting thing. I found that the rattlesnakes did not, that there were very few beans that were going to produce from me into July. Now, I would still pick them into July, but they weren't producing. By late July, I was getting fewer and fewer. So those of you growing rattlesnakes, tell me your experience. I think Jim in Georgetown is probably going to have a longer picking period. That is my suspicion, because his night temperatures are going to be a little lower. Now, Jim in Georgetown may argue with me about that even, but I think his night temperatures are a little lower than they are immediately along the coast. Fowl River, night temperatures are going to stay high. And I want to know how they do. So be sure to make me a report. There you go. Make me a report. This is your assignment, Josh. tell me how those rattlesnake beans do as you keep growing them. Carol's up in Huntsville, and she has a problem, and it starts with a B. And I can't pronounce it right, because Bermuda puts me in a bad mood. It puts me in a foul mood, Bermuda does. Now, I know some of you say Bermuda, I think you say. And I think that's how it's maybe the rest of the world pronounces it. But for me, it's just bad mood Bermuda. I hate it. Gosh, that stuff drives me crazy. Kogan is worse, I will say, but Bermuda's crazy. I spend an inordinate amount of time in good soils, in good clay soils, just digging out Bermuda. And there's really no other way to do it. And it's almost no other way to do Kogan as well. And that's the best way to do Kogan as well. And you can dig them out. And I recommend that you do that. And sort of begin to build a circle out where you don't, and that's what I do. I just start digging it out. I start small. I just get it out of this area. I move to the next area. I move to the next area, and I do it as often as I can. Carol has it in her larynx, and she says, I'm going to wait for the rain today. Carol, I'll be surprised if we're getting rain today. But you're going to get rain tomorrow, more than likely. And the soil will be soft. And if you don't mind working in the rain, you can lift it out then. My soil is pretty soft. And we'll describe here reason why my soil is pretty soft right now. But I just would dig it out and then replace. And then usually you can distinguish. The larynx is pretty easy to distinguish from the Bermuda grass, because it's got those little swollen kind of nodule like roots, little tuber, small tuber like roots, not thick, but tuber like, whereas the Bermuda grass, bad mood Bermuda, just has these long, spiky things that drive me crazy. But dig it out. I don't know another way to do it. And here's the thing, Carol, and everybody thinks herbicides are going to solve everybody's problem. I think the Garden of Eden, when we got expelled, I think everything was rigged to ensure that we were going to have problems with things like Bermuda grass and whether we used herbicides or not. And herbicides may burn Bermuda grass down, but it will be back. It is so hard to get rid of it. But digging it out works really great. And you get to where you don't even need to look. You can feel the Bermuda grass. You know how to pull it out. It takes a little while to do it. Your fingernails get dirty. I'm sorry. I'm a disgusting person because of my fingernails. I try to trim that dirt off as much as I can, but it's that time of year when I'm out there fighting the Bermuda grass and my fingernails get dirty. And that's what's going to happen to you. And I won't think bad of you if your fingernails are dirty, but I think you're going to have to do it that way. Just fork it up and begin to create a sort of a no Bermuda grass zone, a containment area that expands into the area where the Bermuda grass, and you just keep hitting it. It's a problem. It's a terrible thing we introduced, Bermuda grass. It's not from Bermuda, which may be better pronounced Bermuda. It's not from Bermuda. I think it's from Africa. But regardless, it's one of those Eurasian turf grasses that I just despise. It's just, they're terrible. And, you know, why we do this to ourselves, why we import this crazy stuff without ever even thinking about what we had here, don't get me started. You know I'm going to get started if I do this. But, yeah, it was a pretty bad thing. So Josh is already giving us a report from Fowl River on his rattlesnake beans. Yeah, they're starting to peter out. Went from 5 buckets to 1 bucket. Going to chop them down and plant Christmas limas. Okay. That's fine. And I think that's you and B-Dark may both be planting Christmas limas. I think you'll have plenty of time. What's going to happen is those Christmas limas are going to start 90 days, right? So July 21st, August 21st. Well, it's going to be next week. July 25th, August 25th, September 25th, sometime around the 1st of October, you're going to start seeing a lot of beans. And on the Gulf Coast, you'll get a ton of butter beans all through October and into November. And you'll even be able to dry them on the vine, which is kind of nice. So if you have too many and you want to leave some at the end of the year, you can actually dry them pretty well on the vine and actually use those and over the winter because they're dried. And they'll dry on the vine. And they won't get all moldy because we won't have as much rain. So it's a good thing to do. I would ideally, now let me say this, it's not too late. You're going to do just fine. Ideally, maybe butter beans planted mid to late May, maybe the ideal time on the Gulf Coast. The 1st of May is certainly a fine time as well, but maybe the ideal time is probably between May 15th and May 30th. We're not here for perfection. We're here to do as good as we can. And I think between the 1st of May and the end of June, it's on the Gulf Coast. It's okay to plant butter beans. Any window in there. How's that? If you plant a little earlier, you're going to get a harvest a little longer. But if you plant in April, you're still not going to get a harvest till the 15th of September. That's just the way it seems to work, at least in my experience. But y'all are going to keep me posted on that to see if I'm wrong. So B-Dark is going to get into something biblical here. Are you saying using herbicide is like Adam and Eve eating the apple? No. Adam and Eve eating the apple, if indeed it was an apple. We have all of these little issues, all these little things we try to do to avoid thistles and tares, which we were condemned to according to Genesis. But they never work. Not completely, not perfectly. And even herbicides don't work on Bermuda grass. I'll try to say Bermuda grass. All right. What else is going on? Have I caught up with the questions? I'm growing everything, says Clay in Birmingham, except rattlesnake beans and earth boxes this summer. We just returned from a 10-day trip to France, and the boxes with their white plastic mulch really helped keep the squash. White plastic mulch. Yeah, I guess I see what's going on. Cucumbers and tomatoes from drowning during the big rains. When the water reservoirs, the boxes have an effective overflow opening. So do I found upon coming home. One photo shows my first king squash of the year. I normally don't let the lunchbox cucumbers get this big because they're tastier when they're picked at about 7 inches length. I think I agree with you 100% on cucumbers. And we're growing some great cucumbers. I'll talk maybe about cucumbers. Remind me sometime to talk about cucumbers and the ones we're growing. Not today. I'm still trialing a few, but yeah, it's a lot of fun to think about cucumbers. I think there's some that really will take the heat even of July and make it through. So it's one of the things I'm experimenting with. You should experiment with me sometimes, all of you. What else have we got? Jonathan has got a call in. And I'm listening. Jonathan, what's going on?
Hey, Bill. What's going on? Hey, Bill, I'm a first-time caller, but I really love your show. I always listen to it. I just have a couple of questions. Firstly, I have a Muskogee crepe myrtle on the side of my house, and it's beautiful, but it fell down in a windstorm. It's still alive. And I was wondering, should I trim that back and try to stand it back up, or should I just try to stand it back up somehow? I don't know. I could tether it. It's on the very side of my house. I could tether
it. How tall is it? How tall is it?
It's about 9 to 10 feet tall, I guess.
Yeah, how far is it from your house?
It's like literally on the side of my house, so it's probably 2 or 3 feet from my house.
Boy. So So here's a couple of thoughts. It's not, if it falls again, which it's quite likely to do, it's not going to damage your house because it's not that big.
Right.
On the other hand, you got a tree that gets 30 feet tall, 3 feet from your house, and has a spread of about 12 to 15 feet. This may be a marvelous opportunity for you to rethink that. Because if you get it to live, which you may well do, and there's a small chance it won't fall over again. It probably fell over in part because it is so close to the house and probably didn't have a good strong root system. But, this is a marvelous opportunity for you to rethink that.
Yeah.
I would put something smaller. I would, first off, just, you have to listen to my rule. Never plant even the smallest shrub within the first 3 feet from your house, and preferably bring them out 4 feet. And there are just so many reasons for that. So you want, but a tree needs to be, even a small tree, even a fig tree, I would come out 6 feet, 7 feet from the house to plant it. Because otherwise, it's going to get into the gutters. It's going to get into your eaves. It's going to start rotting the eaves. It's going to have, it's just going to be a pain.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm thinking about maybe just trimming the whole thing back. I don't know. But
If you trim it back, it's still going to sprout. Honestly, and here's the truth, unless you, and this is a marvelous opportunity because it's half dug up, you can't kill a crepe myrtle. It's really hard. I can give you some herbicide, but it's going to grow back. And when it grows, no matter what you do, it's going to grow back. Some of those are going to be upright. It may take a while, and it's ugly in the process. And that's one of the problems with crepe myrtle is that you can't kill them, but boy, they can get ugly after a while.
Yeah.
But I would say, you can set it back up. You can lift it back up. No matter what you do, it's going to survive. It's just a question of how long it takes for those roots to start sending shoots straight up. But when they do, if it's only 3 feet from the house, you've just made a nightmare for yourself.
Right. And I've just got one other quick question. I have a camellia bush, and it's beautiful. It's huge. It's like probably 8 to 10 feet tall. But I have a elderberry bush that sprouted up in the middle of it, right in the middle of it, and has been plaguing that thing for years. And I've trimmed it back. I've cut it at the base. It keeps coming back. It's too big to uproot, and it just is plaguing my camellia bush. So I was wondering your advice on that.
Yes, and I love elderberries. They're wonderful things, but man, I know exactly what you're talking about. So when an elderberry gets in a place you don't want it, it's going to grow back vigorously. So what you need to do is you need a couple of things. You need a small paintbrush. I remember in kindergarten, we had these little paint brushes that for some reason they entrusted us kids with, and we put paint on them, and they were like an inch wide, not even about an inch wide, with a little long handle. And we painted tempura or whatever paints we used. And and you need something like that. Very, very small brush. You need glyphosate.
Glyphosate,
which is, I'm not going to use the word Roundup. Roundup is what we used to call it, but Roundup is now a very different thing. You do not want to use Roundup here. You want to use glyphosate. Glyphosate.
Okay.
Just plain old glyphosate. Mix that glyphosate. You don't need a lot of it. You just get the smallest container you can. Mix it according to package directions in a little jar. Cut that bush back as best you can. Make sure you don't cut the camellia at all, but cut the elderberry back as best you can. And then paint those little stumps with the glyphosate.
Okay.
And all right. You may have to do it twice, but I think twice you're probably going to get it. And given the fact that you've been dealing with this for how many years, having to
probably
do it twice is
3 to 5 years at least. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. So there it is. I think treating it twice with that glyphosate will work. There's really not another way to do it.
Okay.
But the glyphosate should work pretty well. Just make sure you, listen, here's the important thing. Make sure you don't scar that camellia bush as you're doing this, because you don't want any of that glyphosate to enter the camellia bush. If you use a paintbrush, that's your secondary protection, because you're not going to spray it. You're actually going to paint it on. And that way you can really control where it goes, and you can make sure that it doesn't get into any cuts on the or exposed places on that camellia bush. Yeah. And you don't want to get on the foliage of the camellia bush either. But there you go. That's the way I would do it.
All right. I appreciate it. And thank you so much.
All right, Jonathan. Good luck. Tell me how it goes.
All right. Thanks. All right, I will. Bye.
Bye. So, this is good. I'm reading this. I'm reading this email because it's kind of making me happy. So I'm going to read it now over the break, and then we're going to come back and we'll talk about it.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
Yeah. So, Carol in Huntsville, this should make you happy. And those of you, we're going to do some nuance here, but this is a message, and I'm not sure who from. Somebody's messaging before, and on your advice, I kill my entire Bermuda lawn with glyphosate and replace it with St. Augustine grass. I had to spray more than once, but I did kill it. And listen to this. I had to spray more than once, but I did kill it. Then I had a deep border installed along the side of my yard to keep it from coming back from my neighbor's yard. It is a ferocious grass, and I watch like a hawk to spray any sign of it trying to get back into my lawn. Yes, and Carol says that, her wonderful, glorious, surely wise and thoughtful and plant knowledgeable HOA. You know what those HOAs are, right? Her HOA loves Bermuda grass. And so she's kind of feels stuck with it because it's coming in from other places. I love HOAs. Don't you? I'm always looking for ways, and I'll be honest, I'm always looking for ways to subvert HOAs. So if, you know, I can't, if there's ever an opportunity for me to join an HOA, I think they should remember that I'm saying this because they don't want me joining. Because I just, gosh. So they're making people plant Bermuda grass. I will say, Carol, that if they're planning, there may be cheesy HOAs, and there's a lot of cheesy, cheap HOAs out there that really, really don't know what they're doing. If there are HOAs that have any modicum, just the slightest knowledge of what they're doing, the Bermuda grass you have may be a hybrid Bermuda that doesn't spread as badly as common Bermuda. How do you tell the difference? You don't know. And it may be that the Bermuda you have in your weed may not be from the adjacent lawns, but may be the common Bermuda that is just about everywhere. It gets mixed in with fescue. If you've got a fescue lawn, you'll end up with common Bermuda in it. So there is a slight difference. So I guess I'm saying don't feel it's useless to try to fight Bermuda grass, even if your neighbors have hybrid Bermuda, because the hybrid Bermuda doesn't spread quite as readily. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't even know whether it produces seeds as readily as the common Bermuda does. So there's less chance for spread. On the other hand, your HOA may be just completely bonkers and is planting common Bermuda, which, you know, if they're cheesy and cheap, that may be what they're doing. But whatever. It's good. But, Carol, it's good to know that there are people who can actually get rid of it. It's, you never get rid of it entirely. And our other texter here who said he sprayed how many times? I did spray more than once. We don't know how many that more than once means, but maybe twice, maybe three times. And you don't probably have to spray the whole lawn, but you will have to spray the outbreaks that come back up. And then he's got a successful St. Augustine lawn in his place. And St. Augustine is really great. Carol, I think St. Augustine would be difficult. It's going to be a little more difficult for you where you are. I do think fescue is a little easier. I generally hate fescue as well. I'm sorry to be so particular. But fescue causes problems in other places and in other ways. But fescue may be a little better if you have to plant a lawn. But just work to get rid of that Bermuda grass. Keep it isolated. Great. An HOA is worse than the feds. Yes, I guess is B. Dark's perspective. You know, oh boy, we don't want to get into that philosophy. But you do have to have organizations of people. And you want to have, if people live together, and that's inevitable. Oh, we all like to think we're independent, but we all depend on other people in lots of ways. And it's good to have organizations that help to coordinate activities. HOAs are set up on principles that are, those principles have nothing to do with gardening. And that's the issue. They all have all to do with how the street looks from somebody driving by at 80 miles an hour. Who gives a hoot? But if HOAs were set up to actually facilitate gardening and to make it easy to garden and to encourage people to enjoy gardening, then maybe they could help with it, making it attractive in one way or another, but not to be just this weird, you got to do this kind of thing. It's weird. I mean, we need organizations that facilitate, and let me be clear, we need organizations that facilitate how neighbors interact with each other. And that may be just two neighbors working together and having an agreement, if that's possible. Sometimes it isn't, and sometimes you just have to work around it. But it's better if there's a little bit of organization. But your organization needs to have the right goals. And the right goals mean, how do we keep this neighbor from dumping on that neighbor? And how do we... But if your only objective is, we got to keep property values high, you're going to have a miserable experience there. Just saying. Let's see. What else we got? It allows ryegrass, but my husband loves it. Loves it. As it's Father's Day, I let him win this one. Loves it. I guess the Bermuda grass. Okay, so there's the other community that you have to deal with, which is your spouse, right? I'm not going to wade into that one, Carol. Let's none of us wade into that one. Do you have a recommended variety of elderberry to plant? No. I don't. I would say that any elderberry you could find that has a specific name is probably not going to do as well for us, or maybe even well for us at all. So I would definitely go with the native elderberries. You do have to appreciate that any elderberry is going to be a bit rhizomatous, and that it's going to produce a ton of berries, and those berries are going to go to seed. And they can seed in other plants. They can seed in fence rows. This is the thing. And so the remedy for this is collect all those berries before the birds do, and keep them contained and keep them a little isolated, those elderberries. But I think the native elderberries are going to be nearly as good as, probably better. Whatever wild elderberries you've got in your yard are probably going to be better than anything you could buy on the, at the getting place, wherever the getting place is, the internet, Amazon, whatever crazy stuff is going on, Lowdown Depot, the one that's growing in your yard is going to be better there. Maybe we should do selections on elderberries, and I've thought about that, but what are we selecting for is a great question, and I'm not sure I have the answer. Maybe we select for a seedless elderberry, which I think is unlikely. But I guess we could. Then you're going to have a hard time propagating it. But that's okay. We can, whatever. But just use the elderberry in your yard. And pick as many of the berries as you possibly can so that you don't have little berry seeds popping up all over your yard. What are you going to do with all those berries? Jim in Georgetown, you're going to weigh in? There's jellies. I think in general, they're probably better cooked and strained, but there's so many good things. And the elderberry flowers are really good things. And there's elderberry wine. You remember that song, some of you? Yeah, I mean, we ought to put that back on the... We've lost a lot of those really good songs, right? We got to put that one back on the circuit there, Steve. Elderberry wine. Any rate, those are the things to do. All right. Okay. What else we got? Why do we humans complain about too much rain and too much heat when we don't realize that there is an in-between? When and if we find ourselves there, we should govern ourselves accordingly. Agree, my friend. That is well stated, Don. It is funny. We do get these periods of heavy rain. We do get these periods of heat. I don't mind the heat, actually. And the rain is annoying when I can't get out and do some things I want to do. But there are all these other times that we can do as we will and as we want. And it's those times are really nice as well. We tend to forget them because they don't get in our way. What else? So I did have two things that I can play off of here that are fun to play off of. The first is it me or is it are there more vultures, I'm going to say it that way, in Mobile compared to past? Huh. You know, I noticed a transition. Possibly, yes. I think that a lot of birds, a lot of raptors, are back in larger numbers. So we're seeing more hawks, we're seeing more owls, we're seeing more vultures. What is the reason for that? And one of the reasons for that, I think, was deliberate killing, which is a huge mistake with vultures. Because we then live with the dead more than is good for us. And so it's deliberate killing, but there was also poisons. And that's still an issue. I don't think people think about this enough. Every time we shot something with lead and left it out there, the raptors were taking in that lead, it was killing them, or thinning out their eggs. And this is still affecting bald eagles, for example. It's still a major problem for bald eagles. But also the poisons we put out for coyotes and other things, for rats, all of those poisons, when the rats died outside, what happened? The buzzards ate the rats after they were dead. And what happened to the buzzards? Whatever poisons you used in the rat got into the buzzards. I think we're seeing less of that now, and I think we're seeing buzzards come back. So that's my thought. We fired once more and they began to run it. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Right? This is the longest day of the year. It's Father's Day, too. I could talk a long time about my father, but I'm not gonna. You think about yours, but you also think about the fact that this is the longest day and of the year, and it's sort of a signal to think about planting more things in your garden. If you want that list real quick, I'm going to give it to you. You can restart tomatoes. You can start tomatoes from seeds if you're on the Gulf Coast. It's a great time to do it. If you're a little north, a little late for North Alabama, maybe, but you could try it up there. It's certainly a great time to start peppers, and I often start them in containers now and later in summer. But they start really easily, and even if they're slow to produce peppers that are slow to produce, you can start them in containers, which is what I often do. Overwinter those, so I'll have some peppers during the winter in containers, and then plant them out next spring, and then boom. Isn't that cool? It's really great. Great way to do it. Okra. Eggplants. You can still start eggplants. Great time to start eggplants, as a matter of fact, anywhere in Alabama. Go ahead and start your eggplants now. If you have a problem with flea beetles, you're not going to have a problem. If you start them now, don't start them in the garden or the flea beetles eat them up, but start them in containers. And they're going to do really, we're going to grow really well. You'll get a good production. Great time for butter beans. You can even try some other pole beans, restarting them now. Great time for southern peas. You know, what are southern peas? Pink eye purple hulls, silver skins, what are the old varieties? Whippoorwill, all of those, you know, black eyed peas. You don't want to grow black eyed peas. That's something they do in California. Any rate, don't worry about those. Okra. Did I say okra? A great time to plant okra. You're going to do fine with okra planting it this late. It's a really good time to plant it. It's a time to get back in the garden, get things going, get them ready. Shortly, very shortly, within a few weeks, and so you can begin ordering your seeds now, those of you in North Alabama are going to have to start thinking about and sowing your winter crops, because you want to get your broccoli, your cabbages, your a lot of other things. You need to get them started in July if you want them to produce abundantly during those cool days of fall, which is one of the best times to grow them. Really good. Lots of great, so just a lot going on these longest days. We could talk a lot about long days, but I'm not going to have time. I am not going to have time. I've got just a ton of things I want to follow up on here. We're going to try to capture one little question here on gardenias as in our waning hours. We have a caller, do we?
Yes, sir.
Hello,
Bill.
Yeah.
I know you ain't got long, so just real quick, man, I bought a gardenia tree for my mama before she died back in she died a couple of years ago, but I got it like 2017 or 18.
Yeah.
It's about 3 foot tall then, but now it's about 12 to 14 foot tall, and it's kind of spindly, and I've never pruned it. It's even got a little sucker branch coming out the bottom. I want to know the perfect time of year, and I'm patient, even if I got to wait till the fall of next year. I don't want no bugs. I keep it alive for my daddy. He's 85. And
Paul?
He can walk. Yes, sir.
Paul, just so we have enough time, and you call me back next week if you have any other questions. This is actually a fine time to prune that gardenia. You're through with your first round of blooms.
Yes, sir.
And you may get a second crop. You may get a second round of blooms as things cool off. They don't like these. They don't like super hot nights, and they may actually have a day length affinity. But so you might get a second bloom out of them. But here's how I would do it. You should have multiple sprouts coming from the base of that gardenia. Like maybe four or five coming from very near the ground. Is that right?
Well, yeah, a little higher up. It's almost like a tree instead of a bush. I mean, it's got a solid trunk.
So you've been clipping back the sprouts?
No, sir. I've never clipped it, not one time.
Is anybody taking a weed eater or mower under there?
Not really. Got a dry riding lawnmower, and I keep it pretty much cleaned out, you know, from weeds and stuff.
So here's what, you know, here's the ideal way to prune a gardenia. And it sounds like it's a little more difficult in your case. Usually you're going to end up with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 sprouts from the base, and they're all going to come up right from the ground. And what you do is each year you go in and take out one or two of the tallest sprouts and take it all the way to the ground. Now, your situation is a little different. So what you need to do is you need to send me a picture of this. And you're not going to have time to do it today. But
right.
Send me a picture of this the next time when you can on a Sunday show. And let me look at it and help you sort through how you're going to prune yours. But in general, you want young sprouts with gardenias. You don't want those older trunks. The older trunks don't bloom well. They get very lanky. So what you want are lots of young sprouts coming up from the base. And I'm having a hard time figuring out why you don't have sprouts coming up from the base.
Because it's got a trunk, Bill. It's like a tree. It's got a tree trunk, and then it branches out. You know,
yeah, and I don't think I remember seeing that happen before quite that way with any gardenia I've grown. So send me a picture. So
it is what it is.
And let me try to figure out how you're going to manage it. Ultimately, what you want is more of those young sprouts coming up from the base. So you say you have one young sprout coming up. That's perfect. Let's figure out what you do with that bigger trunk so that we can thin it out so that you can get more younger sprouts coming up that will be better, more productive of flowers and more manageable and not so tall. But okay, send me a picture.
I'll take about three or four from different angles and a close-up of the trunk, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But, yeah, I'll do all that.
That's great, Paul. And yeah, yes, that is really good. So let's give that a shot.
And when I send them, I just send them.
You can send them just to this number you called. Just send them on your, you know, you got one of them picture phones, I reckon. Just
yes.
Take a picture of it and send it to this, text it to this number, and it'll get here. Okay. Now, do it during the show, because otherwise it might get lost. And Sean, God bless Sean, I have so many questions I need to ask him about hunting, and we're going to do that. But he's not going to have a good answer on your gardenias. Sean, did I insult you? But, yeah, otherwise Sean will try to answer the question if you send it during the week and you won't get a good answer. Does that make sense? Uh-oh. So, send it. That's right. For those of you who may send me questions during the week, just realize this. It's Sean or Dalton who are going to answer the question. And I love them both. And I got questions of both of them. We'll be back next week.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud.
I'm here with Chris Francis, a board-certified master arborist with a master's degree in arboriculture and urban forestry.
I'm really passionate about trees, and I've made it my life work to become the best arborist I can be.
Chris, you've kind of earned a reputation for being expensive. What do you say to that?
We run a professional outfit. Compared to other professional tree services, our prices are right in line with them. But are we more expensive than the guy doing side jobs out of a pickup truck with no insurance? Absolutely. I can't compete with that, and I don't want to. To cut costs, he has to cut corners. Too many things can go wrong doing tree work.
What separates you from the other arborists?
We offer services that other arborists don't. We specialize in taking care of trees and decreasing risk. Structural pruning, soil health,